I think I saw some 40-year-olds. I said four through fourth grade. Not sure about that. I would be remiss this morning if I did not express my gratitude to many of you who have told us that you have been praying for our family this week. We really appreciate your prayers. As many of you know, Dawn and I took our daughter Sage, our second daughter Sage, to Chicago this week, where she is leaving on an 11-month mission trip with a group called Adventures in Mission, and she's going to be flying to 11 countries in 11 months, serving and working in some really, really tough places. And it's been a hard week at our household, as you can imagine, and we really do appreciate your prayers. I now stand on this experience on the side of a father, and I can really appreciate the parents in our church who have done this before. And I'm thinking of lots of families like the Quackenbushes, and I'm thinking of the Shaws, and I'm thinking of the Bourdais family whose son is overseas right now as well. And these families who have been on this side of this deal, we have these kids who have embraced God's call in their life, and they've embraced God's adventure, and they've gone out to serve the Lord in a variety of places. And to all of the students who have gone out and done this sort of thing and who are following God's call now as a parent from this side, I want to just say to you, don't ever do that again. I don't really mean that. But we really do appreciate your prayers this week. Thank you. If the woman in this story that we just read about this morning sounds familiar to you, it is probably because you've seen her before. You see her in the pages of Scripture, but you've also seen her in the shopping mart, and you have seen her at the grocery store, and you've seen her in the checkout line, and you've seen her at school, and you've seen her on the streets of Alma. You've seen her wherever you have seen a parent with that glimmer of pain in their eye because they have a child who is lost. You've seen this lady before. The woman in this story is, as Dawn said, she is a Gentile woman. She is not Jewish. There is a group of people with whom she is on the inside, her neighbors, her friends, other people who live in her community, Gentile people. There's a group of people with whom she is on the inside. But there's a significant group of people to whom she is on the outside, to the Jewish community, to the children of Israel. This lady who was born in Syrophoenicia is an outsider. And she's an outsider with an extraordinarily heavy challenge. A child who is behaving strangely, acting deliriously. A child who experts have told her is possessed by an evil spirit, and she believes them. And so this is an odd story this morning. It is a peculiar and an uncomfortable story. She comes to a door at which Jesus is staying. This is the Jesus of whom we have heard all of the stories. He is a Jesus who today is extraordinarily tired. He has been ministering among the crowds of people day after day after day after day. Friends, believe me, the Son of God gets tired too. He's been working with some of the neediest people in his culture. He's been healing the sick and working among the poor and the outcasts and the needy. He's been contending with religious leaders day after day after day who won't get off of his back. Jesus has been contending with the religious leaders. He's been dealing with thick-skinned disciples who just aren't getting it day after day after day, teaching them the same things over and over. He's like all of our teachers who work with students who aren't understanding, and they're trying and they're struggling to get it through. And finally, the time has come for him to get a day of rest and relaxation. Jesus needed this. And so he has left the boundaries of Israel. He's gone across the border to a little town over the edge, Tyre. He's staying there in a home of someone, perhaps a friend or a supporter of his ministry, and she comes. Now, I don't know if she literally came knocking and pounding on the doors, but at least figuratively, she came pounding on the doors. She's pounding on Jesus' door in spite of the time that he's trying to get some R&R, and she's begging, "Jesus, my daughter, she needs help." If you've ever been around a desperate parent, you understand this lady. She needs help. I've heard about you. Would you please help me? Now, I want you to draw the camera back for a moment and take a little broader vision of this story. There's a lot more going on in this little story that originally meets the eye. This woman is a Gentile woman who is making a claim on Jesus, whom she knows to be a healer who was sent by God. That much we know. This woman is a Gentile who is also, therefore, making a claim on Israel's God. That's what's going on here. This Gentile woman is making a claim on Israel's God. She's longing for God, Israel's God, to come to work on her behalf. Which means that this woman is making a claim on the community of Israel. You see, the God of Israel is a God who had given his blessings upon the people of Israel, including the blessings of community and giving them the blessings of worship and the blessings of all of the resources that community provides and all of the gifts that come with people who know one another and who are insiders to one another. And one of the blessings that had been given to the people of Israel was the power of God at work in their midst to bring renewal and to bring healing. And Jesus was the agency of that renewal and that healing. And this woman this morning is making a claim on the community of Israel. Think about the power of community with me for just a minute, would you? The power of community is so extraordinary. When we are connected to one another, we are blessed by one another's gifts. We are blessed by one another's laughter. We are blessed by one another's encouragement. Community is such a powerful and inclusive gift by which everyone who belongs to the gift of community is helped and encouraged and enriched in some way or another. And this woman is making a claim on the community of Israel, though she is not Jewish. And so she is at least figuratively pounding on the door on which Jesus is staying for a little R&R. And when she gets his ear, she pours herself out to him. "My daughter, can you help her? Needy, possessed by an unclean spirit, could you please, please come to our aid?" And Jesus replies, "Let the bread first be given to the children of the house of Israel. It is not right to give the food that was intended to the children to the dogs." This summer, a group of students from our church, nine young people from our church, high school students, went to Denver, Colorado for the International Youth Convention. They were there for almost 2 weeks. For the first half of their time there, they were part of a missions trip. And one of their jobs on this missions trip was to help to make a carnival of care take place, very much like the block party that we're going to be doing here in just a little while. There was a church, a sister congregation of ours in a very urban setting in Denver, that wanted to throw a party for their neighborhood. And so they reserved this in this very urban section of Denver, and they rented inflatables like we're going to have today, and they had all kinds of games like we're going to have today, and they had a live band from the Denver Rescue Mission like we're not going to have today. I'd be happy to hum a few bars for you out there if you'd like. And so one of the jobs that was given to these nine students from our congregation was to go to surrounding neighborhoods in the days preceding this carnival and to hand out these invitations to the carnival of care. They went door to door, teams of two or three, knocking on doors. When people would answer, they would hand out this invitation. They would tell about the carnival, invite them to come back on Saturday. In this neighborhood that they had never been in before these people they had never seen before, in a section of Denver that looks very, very different than Gratiot County, Michigan, and they went. And they got a variety of different kinds of welcome, as you can see. Many of them were welcomed by barking dogs, the only welcome that they would ever receive. There were a handful of times that their welcome was somebody who would open the door, hear what they had to say, and slam the door in their face. They were welcomed a number of different times by those little signs that say, "No solicitors." One of them, by the way, was very clever. It said, the sign on their door said, "We've already met God. Our vacuum cleaner is working just fine, and we gave it the office." And every once in a while, our nine students were really welcomed. There was one lady who, when a couple of young men came to her door, knocked on her door, handed her a flyer, told her what they were doing, she said, "Oh, you look hot. You probably need some ice water." She brought them into the house, and she poured them some ice water and gave them some cookies, and they were sitting there going, "We just wanted to give you the flyer." Welcome is a powerful word. Welcome and its sister word, hospitality, are powerful words. Have you ever listened to the word hospitality? Hospitality comes from the same root as hospital. Hospitality is an expression of healing. It is an extension of welcome. When most of us hospitality, I'm guessing we think about having somebody over to our home, serving dinner, getting on the kids in the day before to get the house cleaned. When most of us think about hospitality, we probably think in those terms, but the ancient meaning of hospitality is much richer than that. The ancient meaning of hospitality means to treat an outsider like an insider. Hospitality has to do with welcoming people as though they are brothers and sisters, though a minute before they were just strangers. It has to do with extending the circles of community so that the people to whom you extend hospitality are taken into the blessings of your family and your community and your people. It is an ancient, ancient practice all around the world, and one of, in my view, the most beautiful and powerful words there is, hospitality. We receive hospitality, and we don't. Hospitality happens, and, well, it doesn't. Sometimes the doors are closed and locked and bolted, and in this splicing and dicing world in which we live, people are divided into inside and outside. I'm sorry to say, maybe more often than we wish. Let me ask you to set your attention up on the screen here for just a moment. I ran across this Dilbert cartoon this week. I want you to take a look at this thing. Don't know if you can see this very well. In the first screen, the lady with the big hair is looking at Dilbert, and she's saying something like this. I'm getting kind of attached to the fellow across from you who looks a little bit like you. I'd like to spend more time with you, with him and less time with you. So in the second frame, she's saying, "So would you mind moving out of the way?" In the final frame, he's outside of the office, and she's saying, "A little further." Have you ever had this experience? Have you ever walked into the room of a group of people who know each other, but you don't know them, and they don't know you? You have some reason or another to be with this group of people this particular time. You walk in, and they know each other, but they don't know you. You notice as you walk in that they are being blessed by the gift of laughter that belongs within their little community and the gifts of storytelling that are taking place around their little community and the bits of gossip that they're telling one another in their little community. And as you walk in, you think to yourself, how am I going to fit in here? What's it going to take for me to be part of this? And as you walk around sizing up, you begin to get a little insecure. I don't belong here. I don't fit. I don't feel as though I'm welcome in this place. There might be one of the people in the group that belongs to one another that glances up at you for just a second, notices that you're there, and then turns their head back to the people in their circle and continues talking as though you didn't even exist. Hospitality happens, and it doesn't. I don't know about you, but I believe that we live in a world where splicing and dicing is taking place all the time. I think we live in a world in which we are being separated from people who are in and out, people who have and people who don't, people are within the circle and people who are outside of the circle. I heard of a lady who grew up attending a church. And in her church, they gathered every Sunday around the table, the Lord's Supper. This was the center of worship in this particular congregation. They came together to celebrate the broken body of Jesus and the blood of Jesus that was poured out. Only in this church, you needed to go through a class before you could come stand around the Lord's table. And so she, as a young person, went to this class and she took all the lessons. And at the end of the class, she was asked to affirm all of the teachings about the church. And she said, "Well, I affirm most of the teachings of the church, but there are a few things that I have questions about. I have my doubts." And so she expressed her doubts to the leaders of the church, and they said, "Well, it's okay for you to have those doubts, but while you have those doubts, you can't come to the table." And she said her experience growing up was there was one place where she was excluded and not welcome. We live in this slicing and dicing inside and outside, belonging and not belonging world, and that's what bothers us about this story. This is precisely what it appears as though Jesus is doing in this story. This woman who is not Jewish comes to Jesus wanting to receive the benefits and the blessings of the community of Israel, the power of Israel's God poured out on her behalf. And the word of Jesus seems so stark and so cold. It would not be right to give the food that is intended for the children to the dogs. Let the food first be given to the children, and then nothing. Now, as Dawn and our readers indicated this morning, the way we hear this story will make all the difference. The tone of voice in which you hear this story will make all of the difference in the world. There are some people who think that we are coming into contact here with a grumpy voiced Jesus. By the way, may I pause for just a second and say, I hope that our theology of the incarnation, God with us in the person of Jesus, flesh and blood, I hope our theology of incarnation is big enough to imagine that Jesus, who shared our humanity in every way, may have experienced the conglomeration of feelings and emotions and tiredness and exhaustion that we would call grumpy. And there's some people who think that we're listening to a grumpy-voiced Jesus in this story. It would not be right to give the food that is intended for the children to the dogs. By the way, if I don't do that grumpy voice very well, it's because I just don't know how to do it. There are some people who believe that Jesus is exercising a testing voice in this story. He is speaking in such a manner that he is testing this woman to find out whether she'll stick to her guns and hang in there, and if her faith will be deep enough and strong enough. And so his voice maybe sounds something like this. It wouldn't be right to give the bread that's intended for the children to the dogs, would it? Wink, wink. Now, there's another way of hearing this story, and it is one to which I am very, very drawn, and it is this. That Jesus in flesh and blood shared with us an inability to be in more than one place at one time. Because Jesus could not be in more than one place and one time, and because his energy was limited, he could not be for everybody, everywhere, all of the time. Jesus was as limited as we are in those ways. Because of that, Jesus had to have boundaries on his time and on his energy, just as we do. In order to say yes to his mission, he had to be able to say no to that which was not his mission. And so Jesus had once identified his mission very clearly when he had announced, "I have come for the lost children of the house of Israel." That was clear. Those whom I am here for are the lost children of the house of Israel. Jesus' boundaries, because he had limited time and energy, just like us, had to be here and not all over here. And so I believe that it is a boundaried voice. By the way, Jesus was also in line with the prophets who had gone before him, who had announced that the blessings of God were going to be poured out on all of Israel. And when all of Israel had experienced the blessing of time, then there would come a time when that blessing would flow out to all of the nations and all of the Gentiles. I think the voice of Jesus is saying, it's not time yet. The time is going to come when the blessings of God are going to pour out on all the people of the world, but it's not time yet. But don't you love this little woman? Don't you just love this brassy lady? She may not be Jewish, but let me tell you, she's got chutzpah. She hears the word of Jesus, an unequivocal no. And she says, "But yes, Lord, but even the dogs beneath the table get to eat the crumbs that fall off of it when the children are eating." Paraphrase. Even the Gentiles could experience the blessings of Israel as they overflow off of the table, and we too could experience those blessings. Don't you just love this brassy lady? She's got what I want to call an assertive receptivity. She's not just receptive to the gifts and the power and the goodness of God. She's not just aware of the grace of God. She's assertive and aggressive about it. Do you wonder where that comes from? You wonder where her chutzpah comes from in this story. I think the Gospel of Mark has already told us. The Gospel of Mark has already told us in a little detail earlier in the story, she had heard about Jesus. Isn't that cool? She had heard the stories. I don't know which ones. She had heard the stories of a love of God that was present in Jesus that unconventionally broke down the boundaries that separated people from one another and brought people who were outside into the blessings of God. Maybe she'd heard the stories of Jesus going into the leper colony, people who were by definition excluded from the blessings of Israel. And Jesus had walked right into their midst and included them in the power of God and God's healing. I wonder if she'd heard the stories of the sinners and the tax collectors who by definition were excluded from the blessings and the gifts of Israel. And Jesus had gone right to those people and invited them to his table and welcomed them in. If this woman had the gift of foresight, I don't have any reason to think that she did. If she had the gift of foresight, though, she could have looked forward to a day on a horizon that was not very far away, when the broken body and the poured out blood of Jesus would be carrying all of the divisiveness and the disunity and the exclusion of the entire world upon himself in one moment. And upon the cross, if she had the gift of foresight, she might have heard him say, "Father, forgive them." And if she had the gift of foresight, she might have looked forward 3 days later and she might have seen the risen Lord Jesus victorious once and for all, and the arrival of that day when the blessings of God are now extended out to all of the people who entrust themselves to his gift. And so this brassy, may I call her the squeaky wheel, she squeaks one more time and Jesus responds. Do you wonder what voice he used? I wonder if it sounded something like this. "Yes, because of your response, it is done for you as you've asked. Your daughter is cleansed." And it was so. Over the next 11 weeks, our worship is going to embrace a theme called FaceTime. The subtitle of our theme is called The Art of Radical Hospitality. Now, for those of you who are less technologically aware than I am, both of you, I want to tell you that FaceTime is, as Dawn was indicating a minute ago, this capacity that we now have over the internet to speak with one another with our computer screens or our tablets open before us and using programs like Skype or Google Plus or FaceTime, if you're a Mac person, we can talk with one another in live time over our computers or our various technological gizmos. We're going to use this language, FaceTime, as a metaphor for our face-to-face encounters. And we're going to be thinking together about what it means to people who practice the art of hospitality, inclusion, welcome, extending those circles out so that they welcome people who never belonged before. We're going to talk about becoming the kind of people who have a default setting of welcome. Not a default setting of judgment, exclusion, a default setting of welcome. We're not going to be talking about churchy stuff only. What we're going to be talking about will have a lot to do with what we do here, the sort of welcome we extend. But we're going to be talking about the kind of welcome we extend when we're at the grocery store, when we're at school, when we're at work, when we meet strangers. How is it that we become a people who have a default setting of hospitality? And what I want to suggest to you is the way we become people who practice the art of hospitality the way Jesus did, is that we aggressively and assertively welcome our welcome. You see, that's what the woman in this story is doing, though she has no claim on it. She has heard the stories of Jesus, and she aggressively and assertively welcomes her welcome. And what I want to say through this 11-week series is that welcomed people welcome people. Those who have been welcomed by God into God's family, those who have been included by the love of God and who have been welcomed are free to welcome. You see, I think that all of our stories are very much like this lady's. I think all of us come before God and at some level or another we feel ourselves to be unacceptable and unapproved. We feel ourselves to be unwelcomed before God. And then there comes a time, hopefully, when there comes a time when we begin to hear the story of Jesus. And that message of unwelcome is replaced by the message of the cross and the resurrection of Jesus. And we begin to hear not with our heads, but we begin to hear with our hearts. Through Jesus Christ, you are welcome. No matter who you are, no matter what you've done, no matter how you have failed, no matter where you have gone, no matter how badly you have ruined it, through Jesus Christ, as you entrust yourself to his work in you, you are welcome. And as we begin to hear that message, not with our heads, but as we begin to hear that message with our hearts, we begin to assert it. We begin to say it. We begin to affirm it. We begin to walk about saying, well, I don't know what anybody else says about me, and I don't know what cultural mores may say about me, and I don't really care what other people think about me, and I don't really care whether or not I'm approved in certain groups or I'm excluded by certain groups. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to claim my welcome before God. I'm going to lay my hands on my welcome before God. I'm going to open my heart and assertively walk in my welcome before God, because I don't care what anybody says. I belong to Jesus. And what I want to say through this series of messages is that welcomed people welcome people. A few years ago, Dawn and I were walking through Walmart, and we were just doing a little bit of shopping, and I had been very aware in these weeks, months leading up to this particular experience, of assertively receiving my welcome from God. I'd been very aware of this, very prayerfully affirming God's welcome of me, and it was beginning to move its way from my head to my heart. And this particular day, Dawn and I were walking through Walmart together, and I was in some sort of reverie and some sort of daydream. Dawn would say that I was ignoring her. I would say I was pondering very deep things. And we were walking through Walmart together, and I glanced up at a man who is the epitome of everything that I have ever judged. I will not describe him to you, but he was, by appearances, the epitome of everything that I have ever judged. He was a man who, through my entire life since I was a very small child, the knee-jerk reaction in me has been to say, excluded. But on this particular day, walking in a reverie and glancing up and being surprised by his appearance, this man who was the appearance of everything I had ever judged, I was astonished. Because the first thing that happened in me was love. I was overcome with an overwhelming sense of love for this man, who is the epitome of everything that I have ever judged. I was overcome with a sense of compassion and inclusion and hospitality. Now, there's no fireworks in this story. We didn't go out for coffee and become best friends. But as I walked by him, I looked up at him rather than away, as I might have done. I looked up at him, I glanced in his eyes, and I said, good morning. And very warmly, this man said to me, good morning. Welcomed people welcome people. I'm telling you that story because that story was a miracle. That story was the grace of God erupting in my life. That was God's power and love emerging in me to overcome the default setting in my life, which has always been exclusion, and to change that default to inclusion. We may never be more like Jesus than when the default setting in our lives is switched, and we go about our journeys with a default button that says to everybody we meet, welcome. In just a moment, I'm going to share with you a very, very practical and simple way of taking this with you on a daily basis, a very simple discipline. But before I do, I want to invite Pastor Ron and our worship team to come and sing a song. And here's what I want you to do as we sing this song. Many of you will know it. We've sung it many times before. As we sing this song, I want to invite you to assert your welcome of God's welcome. I want to invite you to claim your place as God's child. I want to invite you to open your heart and your mind, and like this Syrophoenician woman, brassy with chutzpah, I want to invite you to welcome your welcome as we sing this song together. If you want to raise your hands, if you want to turn your palms upward as a way of doing that, if you want to close your eyes, however you do it, I invite you, friends, to assertively welcome your welcome.